Welcome to the Beast Sound Podcast. Today we welcome Bradley Laborman. I know Brad from many things, his work on the Tonight with Bradman show, his run for vice president, his success with I Dump For You, and most recently his podcast and his project, Bradman the Movie, on the way. So welcome to the podcast, Brad.
Hello.
And let's start off by telling everyone who you are and what it is you do.
And I always like to say, hi, I'm Bradley Laborman. You might know me from the internet. That's a good guess that that's where people know me from. I'll get like sometimes somebody will be like, you look really familiar, where do I know you from? And I'm like, probably the internet, probably something I did on the internet.
I feel like you were kind of a pioneer on the internet, like you were really doing stuff early.
I literally messaged somebody the other day and I said, because VidCon is coming up next week, that's the big YouTube, well that was more like a TikTok and whatever gathering. Mm-hmm. I messaged somebody the other day and I said, you know what would be a fun panel? I was trying to find an excuse to get a ticket. Was if you brought in all the people that used to live stream, like the first people that did live streaming, because that was me and iJustine and Rhett and Link. Like if you think these people that like, yeah, like these people that are all like doing stuff now, they all started out like as live streamers for a while. And then they moved on and did YouTube and stuff like that. And I said, you should do like a pioneer show, because there were times when I'd go on VidCon when like TikTok was first starting and somebody would be like, you kids should appreciate this man because he had to carry around a laptop and extra batteries and a MiFi so he could live stream. He didn't get the pleasure of doing it on his phone. This is what this guy had to do for you. And I was like, yes, that was me. I did that. I used to carry around a backpack with my computer in it. I carried around one of those UPS battery things.
Yeah.
And I carried around a MiFi. And I had the camera, usually the camera would stick out of my bag and it would go somewhere. And I had to rig my computer so that it would stay logged in even if I closed the screen. Like, I remember one thing I did was the Oktoberfest in Iowa City, where they have the tents up, and it was over where Old Chicago, I don't know if Old Chicago even exists anymore, but like it was like Old Chicago had a beer fest. It was right next to Jiffy Lube. And that's one of the first times I remember going out with my backpack and like live streaming stuff as it was happening. And people were like, oh my God, we're live doing this, and people are seeing it. It wasn't the best quality, but it was still like good times.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now everybody does it on their phone, and it's not even a big deal. And I'm like, and then that's why when Periscope came out, I hadn't been live streaming for a while. I go, oh, I know how to do this. I pulled it out and I started live streaming and I shot up really quickly on Periscope. And everybody's like, how'd you do that? And I said, because it was what I was already doing.
Right.
I don't have to look around a computer to do it now. So
I remember like ripping a couple of your shows that you did with Tonight with Bradman because you were streaming those on the internet at the time, and I still have those.
Yep.
The quality isn't the best, you know, but I'm curious, do you have those archived at all?
Here's the deal. I knew that someday if I ever ran for office or did something, somebody would pull this stuff I did on the show out, because there was some controversial stuff that when I go back and look at it now, it wouldn't flow
sure
today. But I remember I went in and I just grabbed the box of all the episodes and I said, I'm going to record these. And then I just took them. The library reached out to me on the 10-year anniversary of the Iowa City tornado. Mm-hmm. And they apparently have the tornado episode archived at the library.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, because you were the guy, you like went out and did tornado footage, right?
Yeah, we were out there. I think I always tell people the Iowa City tornado like put me on the map. Like, I'm where I'm at now because of the Iowa City tornado and because it blocked everybody from Cedar Rapids coming down to Iowa City. And so we were the only people with coverage. Mm. And so the next day, like CNN and Fox News and all these people were like calling me at work on my phone and be like, you need to come over to the studio. We need to get permission to use your footage. And I'm like, okay. I put a big tag Tonight with Bradman on the bottom of it. So they still found a way to cover it up, but it was still, it was, you know, it was very interesting. I got a I remember they wrote a newspaper article about the whole thing, and just very interesting time. And you know, and you know the show. For those of you who don't know, Tonight with Bradman was this very much like Howard Stern, The Man Show type stuff. And we were doing girls wrestling for March Madness. March Hottie Madness is what we called it. And we had put girls up against each other, and like whoever was the hotter girl won. And that was the thing. Then this stuff happened. And everybody's watching, and everybody's like, oh, he's such a great guy for broadcasting live. And then the next week, I got on, I said, we're not a really good show, and you just need to be aware that, like, we're not good people here. And for the longest time, I said we could take a crap in the middle of Burlington, and nobody would do anything about it. Because there was this time where it was like, I had to like push really hard because I wanted that shock value mm-hmm. of the show. Like, oh, I'll run for city council. That's a fun thing to do. Or I'll say this, or I'll call this woman a bad parent on the air. And I wanted, or I'll go against Gary Sanders, wherever he's at now. I'll fight the 21 ordinance. That was the other thing. But I always did this stuff in Iowa City to push the limit. And then after the tornado, and everybody saw me as like this, like, informative great guy, it was really hard to keep going that way. So I kind of changed after that.
So did you change yourself to acclimate to that, or
I kind of changed myself to, because we weren't live streaming then, but we were putting this stuff on iTunes. Mm-hmm. And shortly after that, I got approached by the people that created Justin.tv. It was first live streaming platform. It's now called Twitch.
Oh, interesting.
Justin TV started as Justin TV. People started playing video games on it, and then it became Twitch.
Hmm.
Well, and also a kid killed himself on Justin TV. So I think they did some rebranding to get around that.
Yeah, I bet.
That came out, and I said, I was doing live streaming, and then one day I realized I can plug the studio into my laptop and stream the entire show. So I started streaming the whole show like it was a regular show. And then other people started doing it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that Young Turks stole their concept from me. I'm just saying a lot of familiar stuff going on.
Right. So I've been on the show back then a few times.
Yeah.
And you always had cool guests too. Did you ever have, I want to say you had iJustina, but maybe I'm thinking of someone else.
No, I did. The first time we live streamed, I knew iJustina because, and I still know her, but we met because we were doing this Yahoo talent search thing where the winner would get their own show on Yahoo. And so we were submitting videos for that. And I was just submitting episodes. And one of the things I submitted was, remember when Oprah dressed up a white family to look black and a black family to look white?
No, I don't, but that's hilarious.
It happened. People don't remember that happened, but there was this thing called Black White. And Oprah dressed up a white family, made them black, and a black family made them white and had them live different lives. So I did a parody of that where I put on like a tuxedo and white gloves and horrible... There's no footage of this, so I'm admitting this now, but I'll just deny it later on. I'll say this is a deep fake of me telling this story.
Yeah.
But the joke was that I was dressed like an Iowa person would think a black person was.
Yeah.
And that was the joke. And I sat down with my roommate and my friends, and I said, I'm going to make a bunch of black jokes here. You guys are black. Tell me what's going to be funny. And then it was a lot of things where it was like, this guy's eating chicken and he's like, oh, I'm full. Do you want some of my chicken? And I'm like, oh, I see how it is. That won't fly today. And I get that.
Yeah.
That was one of the things I submitted to this contest in 2006. That's how weird how things have changed.
Yeah, things have.
I mean, that was 16 years ago, but still.
Yeah. Yeah. And that
doesn't seem like that long ago.
For sure. And that totally would have been acceptable too. Back then, just
It was very acceptable. It's very weird.
Yeah, it's like the shock value humor totally got turned around and is something else now. It's like you get canceled if you do something like that now, which is unfortunate.
Right.
I mean, I get why there. It's not.
I get why too, and that's the thing. That's the point of the matter, everybody. Is that I get it. I know why it's not appropriate now. I mean, there was an episode where University of Iowa put out herkies for around town, and different companies could have different herkies going around. And I said, I think you were on the show. I feel like you were on the show, or Weingarten was on the show at the time. And I said, here are the rejected herky designs. And one of them was Emma Goldman Clinic, which was the abortion clinic. And it was a herky, because the herkies all stood the same way. So I put a hanger in his hand, and I had, like, he was holding a little fetus on the side. And I'm like, that's you know, there you go. And it was just purely for shock value. But now I realize there's no shock value anymore. You just get canceled if you did something like that now.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't a statement of like, oh, I'm pro-life or I'm pro-choice. It was a matter of, oh, here's a funny joke. Hangers are also awesome, you know, also associated, you know, in a bad way with abortion. So here we go. Let's do this.
Right.
But and then there was other ones, and there was like Studio 13 and all this other stuff. And Alley Cat Studio 13 was the gay bar. In Iowa City, that was a rare thing. That was the first time that was a new thing for me. You know, I'm from the Midwest or whatever.
Sure.
But I did drag for several years when I lived in Iowa City.
I was going to say, I remember you doing a couple drags.
Yeah, I did drag.
That's cool.
I'm not trying to get you canceled, Dan, by the way. I'm just letting you know.
I'm not worried about getting canceled.
Any of my topics are like, whoa, what's he talking about? You can cut me off.
I don't worry about getting canceled anymore.
Come after me, everybody. Come after me if you want to cancel somebody.
Or me. I don't care.
Okay. Never mind. Go after him. He wants.
You know, this is what I feel about canceling anymore. If you get canceled, all you're doing is creating another audience for the person, right? Like,
yeah,
people can ride that cancellation train if they want to. And
if anything, if Joe Rogan and Elon Musk has taught us anything, that cancel culture doesn't hurt you anymore. It doesn't. I'm not trying to push the button and be like, oh, well, we'll tell you it does.
Right.
No, I just say it doesn't hurt anymore. And I also feel like, you know, the whole Johnny Depp thing happened, and that really changed everything. And now you're starting to see that. When I lived in LA, I knew this, but Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie had a really messy divorce, and Angelina Jolie was dragging him through the dirt on stuff and like not letting him see the kids and all stuff. And he was just putting up with it. But people that were involved were like, she's allegedly insane on this stuff. Right. And I think now after the Johnny Depp thing, now he's like, I'm suing her for this. And I think now we're going to see all that stuff come out, where we're going to see how Angelina Jolie was like abusive to Brad Pitt. And I will be really interested how that turns out, because I think what's happening is you're going to see a lot of people that accused people of things and then they never came through. Nothing happened from them. And now all of a sudden you're like, okay, well, you know what? You kind of defamed me. Now we're going to turn around.
Yeah.
And we're going to see what happens.
Yeah. You know, you hear people say, well, it's not cancel culture, it's consequence culture. But what's the consequence for accusing people when there's no, you know, like you could just say, hey, this person hurt me and the person never did anything, but the accusation sticks and there's no consequence for that person.
Well, and I think we're stopping the whole, it was innocent, it was guilty by accusal.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't guilty by trial. It was guilty by accused. Like, if you were accused, you were guilty. And that's what happened a lot in the past 5 years on the internet and with cancel culture, was if you were accused of something, you were automatically canceled and guilty. And now it's like, hold on a second. Let's back it up. This Johnny Depp thing turned out to be a false alarm. And even though Kathy Griffin is still trying to, I don't know what she's trying to do. She's like, he's fat and orange and overweight now. And I'm like, we all watched the trial, right? He was at the trial, right? I saw him at the trial. He's not fat. He's not. I mean, Kathy Griffin, you're extremely scrawny and extremely skinny. So maybe everybody looks fat to you, but I'm fat and Johnny Depp's not fat.
Yeah. He's fatter than he used to be, but not fat.
Yeah. 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 It's like, he's more of the actual grape than the Gilbert grape.
So one of the things that we talk about on this show is like, I kind of am interested in people's journeys, like how they started out and how they got to where they're at. So like, what's the first thing that inspired you to start out doing, I guess, performance art?
I had a speech impediment when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say things like school bus, like Fube. And I spoke normal. I could read when I was like 3 years old. My brother was born and all of a sudden I got a speech impediment. And we think it was like some psychological thing. So the school was going to put me in special education. And my mom was like, no, let's have a speech therapist come in, work with him, blah, blah, blah. And then the speech therapist would make me get up in front of the class whenever I did something. Like, oh, he can say L now. So let's get him up in front of the group and we'll do an exercise where he can do that. And I just kept doing that stuff and it didn't really have any stage fright. And then I found out there was a play when I was in like third grade. And I said, can I be in this play? And my mom said, yeah. Started doing plays.
What'd you play in the play? What do you remember your role?
I was a cowboy on a farm in Cowboy on the Moon. Elvis in this junior high play called DuckTales and Bobby Socks.
Okay.
Because I could do an Elvis impersonation when I was a kid. Last year of junior high, I played the villain in this like melodrama type thing called Lumberjacks and Wedding Bells. And I was this guy who was like trying to get the Washington Territory under my control, and these lumberjacks were having mail-in brides come in. It was like a junior high play, right? But it was about lumberjacks and mail order brides.
Okay.
I worked with like this mountain family that wanted to get rid of them lumberjacks too. And so we worked together and I'm sort of like the boss hog. I played it sort of like boss hog. Like I was the very refined person.
Uh-huh.
Mountain people were like the crazy people. I used to say Warsh. And I would say Washington Territory. Cause you know, you're from Iowa. You say Warsh. And my teacher said, it is Wash, Washington. And that was when I first learned of the Iowa accent in theater, where you say like creek, crick, and Washington, washing machine. Like you add these weird letters into stuff that aren't there. So I learned about that and then I stopped talking that way. One was, I stopped saying the. I say the a lot.
A big one in that was ope.
I still say ope. And I also have been back in the Midwest long enough that I somehow got myself out of saying pop. So I say soda all the time and everybody looks at me weird. But there are times in Chicago where I still go, oh, pop machine or something like that. But I did theater all through high school. I didn't have a lot of lead roles. Thought I was mediocre. Didn't apply for a scholarship. Went to college. Got a small lead as a freshman. And I was like, wow. Director of the theater was like, are you here on scholarship? And I'm like, no. And then he gave me scholarships for the rest of my childhood.
Nice.
And then that's when I learned early on that when you come from a small town, you're not based on talent. You're based on your last name. This person's last name is the same as the band instructor.
Oh.
Or this person's last name is the football coach's last name.
Nepotism.
Yeah, nepotism.
Okay.
My senior year, I had done stuff to like get out of like real work. So one of the things I did was I had been drawing a Bradman comic. And I said, I'm going to write a movie about this comic book. Superhero movie. So I wrote that for a class. And then my senior year, beginning of my senior year, my professor came up to me and said, somebody donated this thing called Avid. It lets you record and edit video digitally. This is like 1998, right? And I go, cool. And he goes, if you do that thing where you teach yourself how to do it and then show me how to do it, you can do whatever you want on it. And I was like, can I make a movie on it? And he's like, yeah, go ahead. So I made this Bradman the movie. I used a bunch of copyrighted music and all stuff, but it was a very good movie. People watch it now. I have it hidden, but they're like, that's a really good movie for 1998 special effects.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
I was working at a professional theater doing shows, and I was like, I need to get a real job. And Public Access in Iowa City was looking for somebody who knew how to do digital video. It's like, I know how to do that. Worked there for a while. Started doing this thing where I'd go to the local radio station and I would promote the Public Access station. And then the owner of the radio station was like, would you come work on the radio? Because I like your voice. Started doing a show on the radio. And I was like, this is fun, but nobody can see me. Went to Public Access and I said, do you have any openings that I could do a show on? And they said, we have a Tuesday slot, but it's reserved for local bands. And I said, what if I did like a Conan O'Brien type show and I had local bands come on? And they were like, okay, that works. So then I called it Tuesdays with Bradman. And then we were like, that's fine, but somebody else wanted the Tuesday slot. We didn't want to be on after Guitar Tom.
Yeah.
Because he was a prick. We wanted to move to Thursdays because all the bars had specials on Thursday nights. And the bars were like, if you do the show and then tell people to go out to the bar and hang out with you, we'll hook you up with drinks. You know? So I'm like, yeah, let's do that. So we decided to go to Thursdays and we just called the show Tonight with the Bradman. Because then we were starting to run reruns and it was just easier to say Tonight with Bradman.
Right.
My college was like, send us the episodes and we'll like syndicate your show. So we were like sending them episodes of the show and then they were running them on Saturday night on campus cable or whatever. And that was fun too. I was like, oh, we're syndicated. But it was just this really fun show. And you were on numerous times. We did a lot of stuff too. Like, wouldn't we riff sometimes? Like, I feel like there was like one or two times where you guys just played and I sang.
There was a time you sang, yeah, where we just jammed and you came out and you sang a bunch of stuff. I don't even remember what it was. That's gone. That's lost. I didn't record that.
I got it somewhere. I've got band stuff. Like, I've got you somewhere in a box. It's just your stuff.
Oh, man.
I will be happy to find one of those performances and put it out. There's one where you're singing about a truck driver or something like that.
Yeah, that one I have recorded. That's the one I recorded. The one I really want to see, if you have it ever, is I was in a band called Sunformer before.
I got Sunformer. I know that because it says Sunformer on the box.
Oh, man, that would be great to see again. The guitar player in that recently passed last year. And I'd love to see it again.
Okay. I will look around for you. I swear it's somewhere floating around. I don't know if I have a way to record it, so I might just send you the whole tape and be like, this is yours.
Oh, awesome.
It's on Mini DV, and that's the problem. It's like, you figure out how to get it off of Mini DV, it's yours.
I might be able to. I'll
put it on envelope for you. Put it, be like, here you go.
Thanks, man. Thanks.
Because they just traveled around with me. I'm assuming these tapes are still good, but they've just traveled around with me in a box. East Coast, West Coast,
yeah,
Minneapolis, wherever I lived, they were just there. Sometimes they were in a storage unit for a while. Sometimes they were in a storage unit I didn't pay for, so I had to wait to get it unlocked to get in to get it. But I would always, like, this box of tapes always just went with me wherever I wanted to go. So
that's so cool that you hung out to it all the time.
Yeah.
One of the things I got to know is, what was the genesis of Bradman? Like, where did you said you had a comic, but like, what, how did you come up with that idea?
One of my friends in like fifth grade or sixth grade called me Bradman. And I was like, cool. And then when the comic came out, I had made like Bat Brad and like other dumb comics. And I was like, I want to make him his own thing. I'm just going to call him Bradman. With the joke being that nobody knew it was Brad. Even though his name was Bradman, it was like this, like, It was like a step further than, oh, he's not wearing glasses, so he's not Clark Kent. It was a step further than that.
Mm-hmm.
I just played off of that concept, and then I made the villains like ex-girlfriends I had or like kids at school that were bullies to me or something like that, and I make them the villains. And then when I was making the movie, I thought, well, my last name used to be Workman. What's something funnier for that? So I said Laborman. When I started doing radio, I was like, oh, I'm going to be Bradman because that's my nickname. I'll be Bradman. And then when I started doing the TV show, I'm like, I'll be Bradman because that's my nickname. And then I was kind of not involved with my biological father's family. And they would call me at the radio station when they knew I had money. And they'd be like, help me borrow money. So I said, you know what? From now on, if they call, from now on, I'm going to say my last name is Laborman. I'm going to say I'm Bradley Laborman. And that's going to be my thing. And then so when somebody calls and says, is Bradley Workman there? They can be like, no, Bradley Workman's not there. And they would be like. And so I started being Bradley Laborman, and I did it for the show. And it was also because I had, at that time I was married, and I was like, people can't look me up in the phone book if I'm Laborman, whatever. So I started being Laborman. And then I went on, when I started doing real television, these production companies would try to pay me. They thought my last name was Laborman. My last name was Workman with a hyphenated something or other because I was a weird married guy, divorced, but still kept the hyphenated name. And so one day in New York City, I just said, I wonder how much it is to change my name. I wonder how hard it is to change my name. It's not that hard. It's a very easy, cheap process to change your name. I go in. I write down a bunch of stuff. The judge says you have to do this, this, and this. I go out. I come back a week later, everything's done. He signs a thing, changes my name. I walk over to the Social Security office, get a new Social Security card. It was a very easy process.
Huh.
Not now, because if you want to get a real ID, you have to have all the paperwork.
Oh.
From your birth certificate to whatever your name is now, you have to show every step along the way.
Yeah.
Of how you got to that name.
So that was like early 2000s or something then.
That was 2012.
Oh, okay.
I changed my name in 2011, 2012.
Okay. Yeah, because I've always known you as Laborman.
Right, because I just said I was Laborman.
Right.
And nobody questioned it.
Yeah, yeah.
To the point where I remember I got a bank account when I moved to New York City, and they're like, what's your last, and the check said Laborman, so they just gave me a bank account under Laborman. I'd always have problems because my ID would say Workman on it, and they'd be like,
right,
is this for you? And I had to make it like a business account sort of thing so I could do it. And it was just,
yeah,
it's so tricky how this stuff works.
You said you were on TV, like national TV.
I did I Done For You. You know about it? You remember I Done For You?
Yeah, I did want to talk about that too.
I was living back in Mount Pleasant, Iowa. I wasn't doing the show anymore. I was doing a lot more social media. I was the top Twitter user in Iowa above Chuck Grassley. It was me and then Chuck Grassley for Twitter user. And I decided I want to have a Midwestern event. And I called it Iowa Tasmic, which was the Iowa Tech and Social Media Interactive Conference. So I got on social media. I was verified by some fluke because I was doing live streaming. And I was getting enough people impersonating me that in the early days of Twitter, they said, we're testing out this thing called verification and we want to give you a verified badge. And I go, thanks, that sounds great. And they gave me one. So I was one of the first people that, to the point where like Snoop Dogg messaged me and Alyssa Milano. There's a lot of people that were coming in that were like, how did you get a verified badge? I want to get it. And then I would send them to the girl. At the time, it was this girl called At Caroline.
Yeah.
And she was the one that ran the verification. You would just go, At Caroline, verify me. And if she was having a good day, she'd verify you. Now it's like this huge, like, you have to give a firstborn child and all this stuff. Back then it was like, At Caroline, will you verify me? Yes. And then you wake up the next morning, you're verified. It's so weird how it was back then. And then, but I got on and I found people from like the East Coast and the West Coast. And I said, and some YouTubers that I knew, Swift Karate Chop was one of them, like the really old school YouTubers, stuff like that. And I said, would you guys like to come to Mount Pleasant, Iowa? And I will host this conference. I got sponsors to pay for stuff. I got sponsors to pay for the airlines and the hotel rooms. And I had them fed all the time. Nobody showed up. And it just turned into us hanging out and getting drunk every night because I had bar tabs that I had set up for sponsors. So we just got drunk every night and it was awesome. While we were doing it, I said, I had been doing my Bradman YouTube channel. And I told him, I said, I want to do another channel. I want to do something. When I used to do the TV show and I used to do the radio station, I used to break up with people. It's not my original idea. Other people have done it. Mm-hmm. I want to do it on YouTube. I want to just put a graphic up and it's just recordings of me breaking up with people. And they're like, that's not going to go very well. Everyone's visual. And I said, we'll see. So Louis, who was at the conference, was one of the top people over at Dig. And Swift Karate Chop was like a top YouTuber at the time, whatever. And he said, put it out on YouTube. I'll promote it. And then we'll wait a week. And then Louis can push it up on the front page of Dig. I put it out. Swift Karate Chop mentioned it. It was on Dig the next day. Not with any help. It just went up on Dig the next day. So then I was like, oh, let me put another one up. Because I had various recordings of various people bringing it up. So let me do another one. So I did. I put up four recordings and every one of them ended up on the front page of Dig. And all of a sudden, somebody from Dr. Phil's like, we want you to be on Dr. Phil's show. Somebody from like the Today Show is like, we want you to come be on the Today Show and talk about this. Because it was a phenomenon. And I was like, what is going on? like I didn't realize it. It was like this weird phenomenon. Somebody said, how much you charge for it? And I go, oh, I didn't know. I wasn't planning on charging for it. So I said, $10. Then all of a sudden, I started making money for that. Mm-hmm. Then I was like, I don't want to commercialize this. This guy reaches out to me and says, I own a brittle company. I make brittle. I want to advertise on your website. And I'm like, no way. And he goes, what's your offer? So I go, I'm gonna make an offer for him in like 2000. This is 2009, right? I'm like, $2,000 to be on this website, a month to be on this website. And if you do it, $2,000, and you have to give me like so much money in brittle. Like, I think you have to give me candy too. Yeah, sounds good. No problem. The guy does it. So he ends up on the front page. And he's smart because I'm getting put on all these TV shows and they're showing the front page of the website and he's getting all his advertising. So now I'm realizing, oh, people do want to. So then I'm like saying, what if we put advertising in the breakups? So then I start calling people to break up with them. And then I start doing advertisings in the breakups because I don't care. It's just funny. I'm just like, how can we just make this weird and just whatever? So then I'm just like, I'm calling people and I'm like, oh, really? Have you ever thought of something.com? And they're like, what? And I'm like, never mind. And then I would just move on and continue the breakup or whatever. Picture this television reaches out to me. I think it's fake at first. And they're like, oh, we want to do a TV show. We love this. We want to do it and make it a TV show. I'm like, who's Picture This Television? Turns out they were the show that made Kathy Griffin's My Life on the D-List. They were that. And so they were this Emmy Award winning production company.
Huh.
They're in LA and New York. I go, I've got friends in New York. So I'm like, I'm going to go to New York. I want to be a part of this. So we go there. We start filming stuff. They're trying to pitch it out to different networks. It falls between MTV and True TV. And then True TV wins because MTV. And it's weird because there's like all these different concepts of like what we want to do. Do we want to animate the breakups? Do we want to have puppets? Do we want to have me as a puppet? Do we want to have me as an animated person? It breaks out to the point where it's like I'm live action and the callers are, the people I'm calling are animated. And it's like they say things to me like they're like asking me advice or a question. I go, you know what I really like is the College Humor animations. The cartoons for College Humor. Can we get that guy to do the cartoons? They get that guy.
Wow.
They go out and they get the guy from College Humor who's doing the cartoons for College Humor to do my show. And I'm like, what? This is great. He like sends me concept art like, this is what Bradley would look like if we animated Bradley. And I was like, no, I don't like that. I want to be live action. But MTV, I ran into them at a party. And this person from MTV said, we fought so hard to get your show. And we just couldn't get it. And it's so weird to hear that now, like to hear that after the fact. But then the show came out on, the pilot episode came out on Valentine's Day, 2012. Same time Impractical Jokers came out. same time, Conan started airing on TBS.
Okay.
After an episode of Conan, they didn't have anything to put on. They put on Impractical Jokers. They could have put on my show. They put on Impractical Jokers. All these people tune in for the first episode of Conan and then watch Impractical Jokers afterwards. And then Impractical Jokers blows up because it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I hated him for a long time. I didn't want anything to do with him for a long time because of this. I was very bitter towards them. But they're funny. And I watch them now. I watch like the whole, like I just sit there and watch them all day.
Mm-hmm.
And then they kind of show up my show. Mm-hmm. And they said, you can go out and pitch the idea, but you can't use the animated style. You'd have to do something else with it. And you can't have these 10 episodes because we own the rights to these 10 episodes.
Oh, man.
If I tell you an episode, you might remember it. Remember Farmville?
Farmville?
Yeah. Remember there was an episode. I called a guy to break up with a guy because his girlfriend said he was obsessed with Farmville. And he was like verbally abusive to her because she wouldn't join his farm in Farmville. And he like skipped out. It was a Valentine's Day one. He skipped out on Valentine's Day because he was like harvesting pineapples. Or like he had to like harvest his food on Farmville. Nobody even knows what Farmville is anymore. But like, remember when Farmville was like the most important thing in everybody's life?
Yeah.
It took 2 years to produce one episode of I Dumb For You. So it's kind of bitter. I took my money. I went back home. I invested, I made a children's theater. And I started doing plays with kids. I did children's theater. And the idea was I'm going to cast kids based on their talent, not on their last name. And I went back to my hometown and sort of like to, as a middle finger to my hometown, I said, I'm opening this children's theater and anybody can come be in the children's theater. And if a kid can't afford to be in it, tell me and I'll take care of it. Yeah, I'll let everybody be a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
Kids would come to me and say, the high school's doing these boring plays. Can we do something more fun? So I'm doing all these different plays with people. And then the kids are like, we want to do something really on edge. So we decide we're going to do Laramie Project. I decided I'm going to take high school kids and adults from the community, and we're going to put them together, and we're going to do a Laramie Project. And everybody's excited about it. And then the parents find out. And all of a sudden, four of the high school kids that wanted it to begin with can't be in it anymore. And so we still put it on, but everybody in this small town refuses to advertise it. And Burlington ends up writing a story about how Mount Pleasant is ignoring us because of the Laramie Project. And turns into this big thing where everybody's like, oh, you're making our town look bad and all this other stuff. And I kind of said, okay, well, I'm done. So I rounded the kids up and I said, I love kids and I love theater, but if I continue to run this theater, I'm going to hate both of these things. So I just want to leave now while I still have a passion for theater and a passion for working with kids. I just retreated up to Minneapolis because it was like, it's like New York, but it's Minneapolis, and I can still be close to my family. I'm just going to do social media, forget about it. And then Periscope came out. And then I did Periscope, and then all of a sudden it's like, you should move back to New York. And then I moved back to New York, and everybody I knew in New York wasn't in New York anymore. Around that time, somebody from ABC Family reached out to me and said, do you have any other show ideas? Because I Dumb For You was a funny idea. What other things do you have? So I said, well, let's have a meeting. So I had a meeting and I said, I had this idea for a show where I'm a sorority girl. It's called The Chunky Zeta. And it's based on, I did a YouTube sketch where it was called The Chunky Coed. And I would dress up like this college girl. And I would just be this chunky college girl that like spoke very nonchalantly about sex. And didn't really like care about what she's talking about. And that was based off of Brenda, who was my sister, that we would send out on Tonight with Bradman. We would do these fake via satellite conversations, like when the girl disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when that girl disappeared in like Columbia, wherever she was at, that Natalie, whatever her name was, that girl went missing. She's dead now. I feel bad about it, but
oh man,
like it was like something like that, where there'd be like news stories where it was like, this girl disappeared during spring break, so we sent my sister out to this location to ask what people's, what the mood was. And then the joke was like, it was me in a wig playing this college girl, and I was just trashed, and I was just chugging beer and drinking the whole time, and I was just disgusting. And then what we would do is we would record it, and then I would just interact with the recording like it was a live studio. It was like a live satellite feed. And then we like would rehearse it. So then like whoever my co-host was or Candyman could ask questions, and we could time it out so that she would respond, and we could cut her off, and it would just be funny. It was whatever, that was the thing. Anyways, so I said, I have this idea for a show. These girls are seniors in college. They're in a sorority house. They're the most horrible girls in the world. In the first episode, they realize that guys haven't tried to roofie them, and they don't know what's wrong, so they go out to try to get roofied. ABC Family is, of course, like, no, we can't put this show on it. They said, we could maybe run this on our new digital, I think it was ABC Go.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I can put it on digital, and that's what I decided I was going to produce my own stuff.
Yeah.
Because I Dumped For You took 2 years, wasted 2 years of my life, and then they shelved it. And I was like, I can produce stuff, put it out 6 weeks, and then that's good to go. So that's when I started producing my own stuff.
Right. And I've seen some of those.
Yeah. The stuff was out, and then Amazon took it all off. Because it was the same thing where it was me dressed like a woman, and the whole idea was like, I'm not a drag. It's a female character. I don't want to ever portray like I'm in drag. It's just me as a female character.
Right.
But people took it as I was insulting transgender community or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that isn't what this is about.
It's like Monty Python, is it, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like Monty Python. We did have an episode, though, where I had this girl, Christina, who was a friend of mine, play Brenda's ex-boyfriend, who was obsessed with her, so decided to get a sex change operation to become a woman, to be more like her. So, and it was Christina, and Christina was like shorter than me, and the joke was my boyfriend was taller than me, and then after she had the surgery, they were shorter because they took like a couple feet off of her, and the joke was that Christina was a transgender woman, but it was just, she was just a woman. And then but I, not without trying, I reached out to several people, transgender actresses I knew, and I said, do you want to play this part? And they said, no, we don't want to, whatever. So we had to rewrite the episode several times, and then I think it was pretty good, but it was more of like the end concept of the thing was, it didn't matter that she was a woman. She was still had a bunch of toxic masculinity, and she wouldn't commit all the way, because at one point she pulls up her dress and she's like, anyways, it's very, I can see why that episode got pulled off. I can see that now. I've learned a lot about this. I've learned a lot about this. So, and I have some other stuff that I'm working on, but I left LA for a lot, like in 2019, I left Los Angeles because I was dealing with this guy who wasn't paying me for a project that I was doing for him. I was broke at the time because stuff was getting taken off of this of Amazon and things like that. And I just my tire got booted in LA, and I was like, what am I gonna do? Because I was like driving Uber, it's like a spare time job. I couldn't drive Uber. Mm-hmm. So I called my brother, and my brother goes, I will pay for your boot, but you need to come take a break. Come to the Midwest. We live in Bolingbrook. Come stay with us for a couple days, whatever you say, a week, a month, however long you want to stay. So my lease was up in my apartment in LA, packed everything up. I had a couple of nights to stay in Vegas. I had a bag of edibles, went to Vegas, sat by the pool, did edibles for a couple days, decided to drive to Chicago, see my mom along the way in Iowa, drive to Chicago, and then I was going to go to New York. I was just going to take my packed card in New York City, and I could get an apartment easily. I could be like, I know where I want to live. So got to Chicago, went out to karaoke that night, forgot how much I just love small town Midwest, whatever. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to stay here. My driver's license expired like 2 days after I got there. So I had to go over and get a new license because California license, when they expire, you don't get like a 30-day grace period. They're done.
Oh, wow.
So I was like, I need a license. So I went over to Chicago and I said, oh, I'll just, you know, my brother said I was renting from here or whatever. And I got a driver's license in Chicago. And, I was like, well, I'm already here. I'm in Illinois. I've got an Illinois driver's license. So I might as well just stay here because why go to New York and get another one? So, and then I just found a job working in a real estate association, and they needed somebody to make videos for them. So I just started making videos, and then I would do podcasting on the side. And then the people I worked with at the association, they were like, do you ever miss making movies? Because I was in this movie called Rideshare, and they all watched it. It's about, I'm a killer rideshare driver.
Okay.
You can find it, Rideshare the movie. You can find it. I gained a bunch of weight for the movie, and I haven't lost it yet. I've lost a lot of it, but I'm getting back to normal. But I'm pretty huge in that movie, so it's pretty interesting. But I went, they said, you know, if you want to take some time off to make another movie, go ahead. And I'd always wanted to remake Bradman. Because the thing I did wrong about Bradman was I used copyrighted music so nobody could ever see it. So I rewrote it, which I'm going to tell you something about rewriting it. The script from 1998, I had to rewrite a lot of it because a lot of the problems could be solved just by calling somebody on a cell phone.
Mm. Yeah.
And if you think, and in 1998, cell phone wasn't an issue. So that's how, it, just in timeline period, like, cell phones weren't even that popular in 1998, and that's weird too. And now they're all over the place. And so I had to like rewrite stuff for that purposes. There was some characters that I wanted to really push on. I also was like, you know, I wrote this when I lived in Iowa in college, and it's very white. I'm going to go back through, and there's several characters that are ambiguous that I could play around with in regards to gender or ethnicity and things like that. I went through and changed a bunch of characters out. And I really have a good group of people together. I was like, who do I know that plays music? There's some songs that I knew I wanted to put in the movie, so I had to pay for those and go through this stupid process to follow this up. Then I'm like, who do I know that would just let me use a song and wouldn't try to gouge me for money? And I was like, Dan, I know Dan. So I said, let's do this song. There was a song that I liked from Matt Weingarten. So I called up Matt Weingarten. I said, hey, can I put your song in this thing? Dan Bobek's new song. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay, yeah. Let's all put songs in this. I'm like, everybody from Iowa City who I knew, I was like, let's put some music in there. So, and then I, you know, if I have stuff I still need to film, I'm still like any Chicago bands. I thought it was going to go out last year, but editing and stuff like that, it'll come out in September.
Oh, wow.
You know the Willy Wonka video song?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I kind of wanted to know if I could make that the title song for the movie because I kind of like that.
Oh, yeah.
A lot better. Now that I hear it a lot, I'm like, I want to make that. All right. So there, we just officially agreed on the air then.
Yeah, you're pretty good.
We'll make that the title song for the movie. A lot of like stuff flying through space sort of stuff going on at that time and things blowing up. And I was like, that's a good song for that. I think that song will work out good.
Cool.
Originally I had Chumbawamba as the title song. And originally before that, I wanted to use this song from Machines of Loving Grace called Butterfly Wings.
Okay.
Or something like that. And I got this CD in my mailbox in college, and it had a bunch of sample songs on it. And I was going to use those for the movie. And then one of my roommates stepped on it. But then I refound all the songs. And one of the songs I found was written by Sam Sham and the Swing, is what the name of the band was. Turns out the guy is a famous music producer now, became friends with him on Facebook, and I was like, there's a song you wrote that I have a sample of that I found now because it's 2022 and I can look up stuff on the internet. Can I use your song? And we tried to, he was like, we're trying to get the rights for it still, but
yeah,
he's like, if you can get everybody to agree to it, you can use it for free, because my son makes fun of me about that song all the time, and if I can put it in a movie, I go, it could have new life, especially now, because look at like Kate Bush.
Sure.
Have you watched Stranger Things this season?
I've not yet, so.
They use a Kate Bush song in it, and now Kate Bush is in the top 10. The song that the Running Up This Hill or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
when it was out originally, she was like top 30.
Sure.
And now Stranger Things uses the song, and now she's like charting in the top 10 in the United States.
Yeah, that happens a lot.
And she's all over TikTok. It's like everybody's like, I'm going up that hill. Like, that song's on every TikTok right now, so.
TikTok's great like that. They bring songs up out of the ether all the time.
American Idol does that stuff, too, all the time, where, like, somebody will sing a song like an American Idol or America's Got Talent, and then all of a sudden everybody's like, oh, that's, I haven't heard that song in a very long time. But Stranger Things is all about, like, those shows, and then people put them on TikTok. Like, Bruno from, like, Encanto. The We Don't Talk About Bruno song from Encanto. That was one where when they put out the songs for the awards, the movie hadn't come out yet, so they picked this other crappy song and said, this is a song. And then all of a sudden, We Don't Talk About Bruno got on TikTok, and then everybody was like the radio station that I listened to started playing it as like a regular trend. And they just played the Kate Bush song today and said, it's top 10, so we can play it now.
Yeah.
It's just weird how that all works. So
I'd like to rewind just a little bit. Speaking of songs that we've done together, that I've done with you, you had me do a song way back in the day for you were running for vice president.
This guy that I knew that did a lot of social media, we were trying to find some sort of angle to get some like social media hits, and the election was going on. I think it was the Obama. It was one of the Obama elections or whatever. And all these people were running for vice. They were running for president. And I said, what if we did something where I said, I'm just going to run for vice president and I'll agree with anybody who wins as president and I'll be there and I can be their running mate. And so he's like, that's funny. Let's do that. And then I think I reached out to you and I said, can you write me a song for this? And then he wrote me this great song. That I still have, that's not everywhere, that I have like a hidden YouTube video of it or whatever. And I constantly think to myself,
mm-hmm.
I either need to run for vice president again, or I made a Bo Laborman URL.
Uh-huh.
I got really excited about being in politics, and I still kind of am excited about being in politics. And I really feel like I could do it here in Chicago even, or in Illinois or whatever. And so I made a Vote Laborman website that just isn't doing anything. But I keep thinking to myself, if at some point I run for office, there we go.
Yeah.
I'm going to do this Vote Laborman thing. But then I go, if I do this, I'm going to like, we're going to have a different theme song. But I love that. I just love that theme
song. That's cool. That's cool of you.
I love it so much. I love that. It's funny. Like, I think of songs that I love the most, and it's that song is one of the ones that I remember all the time. And I had Candyman. I would say like, hey, will you write me a theme song for this show I'm working on, whatever? And then he would like send me back some instrumental. I said, I want something that sounds like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but not Always Sunny in Philadelphia. And then he wrote me the theme song, and I'm like, this is great. And then that show didn't work out, and I go, can I use that theme song for a different show, and I'll still give you credit for it? And just stuff like that. I like just there's just different individuals that I'm just like, you guys are really talented, and that's why like if I can somehow get popular with one of my projects and then your song gets popular because of my project, then I feel like I've accomplished something.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because I'm a big fan of the whole bringing everybody along for the ride.
Sure.
You know, you were always very supportive of me because you came on the show and you never said like give me money for being on the show or whatever. Yeah. And everybody knew it was coverage. And I know that Bradman for a while was listed as in the venues stuff on like some of the different band sites or whatever. And I was always like, you know what? All these people that helped me out, I want to help them out later on.
Yeah.
If I can, everybody that worked on the show for free at the time, I was always like, when I got the show in New York City, when I was doing the I Dumb For You, I called Little Nicky. I called the people that were on the show, and I said, do you want to come to New York? I can put you on the show and you can get paid to be on the show because you worked for free when we were in Iowa City.
Sure.
And they had all moved on and had lives. So
yeah, that happens. Not everyone can be an artist forever like us.
Yeah, like us. Exactly. Nobody can just stick it out forever. Like, I remember I was telling somebody also about how I used to just be like quite like the show produced a lot of groupies. I was trying to explain something today. Go in Iowa City, there's not a lot to do. And so like if you're on a public access show and I would have these groupies and I was watching old videos where like girls are like kissing on me and hugging on me and something. I'm like, I used to have a lot of groupies when I was did my show. But it would also be like, oh, I love you so much. Like, it'd be like, we'd be fooling around. She'd be like, I love you so much. I'm like, what's my name? And she'd be like, Brad, man. Like, she didn't know to call me Bradley. She called me Bradman or whatever. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, whatever. But about that, I just remember, oh, no, I forgot. I was going to tell you something. Oh. A funny story. Now, I just totally blanked out what I was going to talk about on that. But it was just like all these, like, couples and girls that I met along the way, and I'll figure it out.
Okay.
I had a story. I'm old. It's gonna happen.
It's all good.
I'm old now. I can't remember stories like I used to. I just remember I used to get a lot of punani, and now I don't. I'm kidding. I'm fine. But
oh, okay, that's good to know.
Yeah. Oh, no. So I do have a story about this. So I met a girl when I was doing the show, and we talked to each other all the time. We made friends. And now recently with the pandemic and just talking to people and interacting with people, we've kind of like rekindled. And it's this thing where it was this scenario where it's like, you know what? We've both known each other for like almost 20 years. Because of the show and just like interacting and talking like that. We've all had separate lives and we've all seen each other like all over the place doing stuff. And then it's kind of the thing where we just came back to like, huh, let's hang out. Let's see where this takes us. So that's this weird thing that came from. So if I have one good thing that came out of Bradman, other than meeting you, it was, you know, one of the girls that wrestled on my show once is now like, I might end up being somebody in my life forever. So.
That's cool.
Well, she's already been in my life forever, but now you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. A little closer, maybe.
Yeah.
That's cool. One other thing I want to touch on, do you have a podcast?
I do.
This was a couple of years ago, so I don't think this is the same podcast you had, but I remember you were interviewing Justin Roiland from Rick and Morty.
Yes.
How did that happen? I'm just curious.
The Rick and Morty came out, and I had social media presence, and I still do. And I would just be like, that was just me doing Ustream. I think I was just doing live Ustream at the time or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And not just Justin Roiland. Like, I interviewed Greg Grunberg from Heroes, MC Hammer. I had a long relationship as a friend with John Popper from Blues Traveler. And then we got into an argument, and now he doesn't talk to me anymore. But Shannon Tweed sent me I said I wanted to move over and start doing HD video. Shannon Tweed sent me a camera. Like, my first HD camera was from Shannon Tweed. So she's like, I went to Best Buy and asked them what I should get for you, and then I packaged it up and mailed it to you. I was like, wow, thank you. This is what a weird thing. But yeah, Justin Roiland, I said, this was several years later of me doing the show, but I just got on social media and I said, you want to do this show? I'm a big fan. Because I was a big fan of, oh, no, I can't remember it because Rick and Morty ate up my mind. But remember Patton Oswalt or somebody had a show, Jack Black maybe it was. They had a show where they were going to do, it was like TV, and then every week you could vote a show off. And then if you voted for the show, they got another episode. And there was this show that was called Mr. Pickles. I think it was called Mr. Pickles. And it was like the Cat in the Hat, but it was like these like Justin Roiland type characters. And a lot of them remind me of what's going on with like Mr. Poopy Butthole and stuff like that. Like that's the type of stuff.
Yeah.
It's like, but it was like this Cat in the Hat type character that got in trouble for hanging out with kids because he had like a restraining order. And so I kept voting for the show because it was really funny. And that's where I remembered him from. I don't remember if it was Patton Oswalt that had the show or...
I don't remember the show.
Something TV. It was a show on ABC and you could vote. And it was like, they'd run episodes and if you voted, you could keep it going. You could keep one of the episodes going. So I knew him from that. And so I used that as the angle. And then since I did that poll, he was like, oh yeah, let's do the show. And I still see him pop up on Skype once in a while too.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, I think it's weird. But also, I just recently realized the guy that invented Dogecoin, who just came out and said, I don't support it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He was on my show because I was an early Dogecoin adapter. I was an early crypto adapter way back in the day. I had a show about how I lived off of cryptocurrency. I did in like 2014.
Wow.
2014, 2015. I did the show. You can still find it on YouTube. It's called It's All About the Crypto. And you can find it... Whatever, that's a show that Drew did the sound for, because I wanted to do like an Always Sunny in Philadelphia type show / Curb Your Enthusiasm with this like weird cryptocurrency, like I'm living off of cryptocurrency. And then what's his face from Super Size Me did a show where he lived off of cryptocurrency, and I'm like, dude, I did that. And people were like, Bradman has already done this, why are you copying this?
Right.
But it was just this weird, surreal time where I lived off of cryptocurrency and people were paying me in crypto. And I was hearing all this stuff and people were saying, by 2016, in September 2016, it's going to double or whatever and all this stuff. And so I'm telling all these people this stuff on live streams. I'm like going, you know what I heard? In September 2016, it's going to double or triple or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I got rid of all my crypto.
Oh.
And then... it shot up to 30,000, and all these people are like, we listened to you and we made all this money. And I'm like, where's mine? You would think, like, if you made $30,000 off of something I said, you could give me $1,000, right? Yeah. I feel like that'd be like a fair, like, thanks for the tip. Here's $1,000. Cause I bought five. So I didn't make 30,000. I made $150,000. But yeah, I just, nobody ever like goes, oh, thank you for these tips and here's some money for you or whatever. But also it's weird because I'll go through, I had an old Bitcoin wallet that I would pay for stuff on. I think it was Circle before they closed down. And I would look through like money I'd sent people for like pizza and stuff like that. And like to the transactions now said like $35,000, $50,000. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Oh, but that was, you know, it was one of those things where I made the choice to, you know, I did that numerous times. They had sent me, William Shatner was doing a show in Iowa City. And it was the night of my birthday show where we were going to have cake wrestling. And they said, we want you to go and try to get into this reality show. And I went there and I was like, this doesn't seem legit at all. I don't want to be a part of this. I got to go do cake wrestling. So I left. And then it turned out that it was a fake show. And William Shatner gave all these people money to be on the show. Remember that Iowa fake reality show? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
I missed out on that too. I did that. I've done that numerous times in my life where I missed out on something because I just was like, nope, I'm cutting this short or I'm not being a part of this or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
You live and you learn.
It's very true. Very true.
Yeah, very true. But we're still thriving, so it's good.
Well, yeah, yeah.
But my current podcast is just... The Sucky Podcast. And actually right now it's on hiatus and I'm not sure if it's coming back now or not. I'm still up in the air on it. So,
okay.
We'll see what this. I haven't decided yet. Yeah. I've got a project I'm working on, top secret. We're shooting a pilot. I can't even mention it because I can mention it because I'm mentioning it.
Yeah.
But people are like, don't share the concept because somebody will steal it. And I go, oh, I didn't think it was that good. And they go, no, that's incredible. Shoot us a pilot. And I go, okay, so I called some people in Chicago and I said, you want to be in a pilot? Nobody's getting paid.
Yeah.
We're just shooting it. And then if it gets picked up, then everybody gets to be in it. So that's the nice thing about it is they said, whoever you cast to be in it, if it gets picked up, then they can stay in it because of the way that the show works. So
could be a good opportunity.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good opportunity if it pans out.
The last question I like to ask everybody is there anything that you wish I would have asked you about, but I did not?
No, I think you hit everything on the head. I think you hit everything on the head.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Bradman TV. Just if you go on social media, you type in Bradman TV, you're going to find me. Easiest way to just go to bradman.tv, go to my website, and everything's right there. If you want to buy a house, go to my real estate page, which is bradleylaborman.com. And I have a whole different persona, which is Bradley Laborman, and that's my real estate stuff. Because when I was shooting Bradman the movie, I had several people that were involved with real estate. And so I thought to myself, oh, if I went back to real estate, I'd have more time to actually do podcasts and shoot movies and stuff like that. And I'd have a lot more flexibility. So I took classes and became a realtor. And it was amazing because I didn't realize how many friends I have that are actors were realtors. And so I have this nice thing where I'm like, oh, I have connections in like New York and LA and Florida. And so if you don't want to buy a house here, I'll send you someplace else. But I've got these people all over the place I can send you to. So it's a nice little added thing. So
very cool.
I'm very happy with that.
But thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me, Dan. Thank you.